Ridley.
We actually have no action items today. However, Brian has brought with him today Dr. Peggy Crow, who's going to talk to us about a very important area, counseling in the testing center overview. And we have touched on the importance of this, and the thread has run through almost everything that we have discussed today. And each time that there was a point, would turn and point to her, thinking, I'm sure she's going to tie this all together in a nice little bow. But retention, the comfort level of a parent knowing that their child or person is at Western and being cared for and has access to things they need. And so I think this is an extremely important part of student affairs and could be the underpinning of a outside of health and safety, this could be as important as the learning experience itself. So thank you for being here. And, Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, you've done a great job of introducing Peggy. I will share that Peggy has been at Western off and on since 1996. And we were pleased when she left to go to Bowling Green State to work on her doctorate that we were able to get her to come back. And Peggy currently is, as Regent Ridley says, is the director of our Counseling and Testing Center. And I'll turn it over to Peggy.
Okay. Well, I like to stand. And because it's after lunch, I'm probably going to move because I want to look people in their eyes, and that's just how I am as a presenter. So, but I brought, I didn't come without gifts. So I want to pass around some pens so you can spread the good word about the Counseling and Testing Center. I also have one of our brochures so you can learn a little bit more. And this is no judgment, but I brought brains, okay? I was like, how am I going to say this? All last night, I'm like, how am I going to bring these up? I'm going to have you pass these around, but these are stress brains that we give out in the Counseling and Testing Center. I had a young woman come up just a couple days ago, and she said, I'm so anxious, and I've been with you all, and I just need to be in your center. And so just she had a seat, and she grabbed a brain, and she was wearing that sucker out. So these are stress brains that we hand out for as a way to communicate about what we do in the Counseling Center, and kind of fits into our tagline that college should be challenging but not overwhelming. That's one of our taglines. So thank you, Brian, and thank you to the board for this opportunity to speak briefly. I know you just finished eating, so I'm going to talk quickly so we can move on with the agenda. I'm from the north, as Brian said. I'm from Wisconsin, if you couldn't tell from this accent. So if I slip out of you guys, that's my gender-neutral term for y'all. In case. So we'll go ahead and get started. I'm pointing like Jeff is going to move this for me, and that's my job. I want to talk, this is just a basic overview of who we are and what we do and how we serve our students. So this is my team. I have one, many of you probably know, I have a pointer. Carl, well you can't see. Carl in the back, he's one of our staff psychologists. And then I have three licensed master's level clinicians, Elizabeth, Brian, and Betsy. And then we have two GAs this fall. I'll talk a little bit about our training program. And then Star down there, our animal-assisted therapy dog. I'll talk about her in a moment. So that's our team. This is a little bit about Star. I should have brought her to the meeting so you all could meet her. She came to us. We started this program in March of 2015. We had a dog. She didn't work out. And so we got Star this past year, a year ago about this time. And she is tremendous. That tells you a little bit about her. And she goes out. This is a picture of Betsy at one of our ATP programs. And so she is a partner on our team. And students come in and she can be in therapy. That's oftentimes what she is. She'll sit on the chair. She'll fall asleep. She really doesn't sometimes even pay attention. She's just a good to help alleviate the stress or anxiety that students may have when they come in to see us. She's very good for outreach. So essentially, this is our tagline. College should be challenging, not overwhelming. We've all been to college. We all have children. Some of us may have children in college. Some of us may have grandchildren in college. And it is a challenging time. However, there are people in places, especially in our Division of Student Affairs, and I know that over the past several months, you've heard from several of our units in the Division of Student Affairs. We are one of them. And these are our primary roles to, you know, support the clinical work and outreach and training, and then we do offer academic testing. But this is our goal, and this is what I want everybody to really understand. There's so much stigma around mental health. And I remember Carl Lavis, when I came here a long time ago, was a young hall director and worked in housing. Brian and Lynn were my supervisors and kind of groomed me as a young professional. And I remember Carl coming in and training us, and he said, you know, when you hurt your leg or you cut yourself, you go get it taken care of. But there's so many internal things, psychological things, that we're hurting. And there's really a lot of stigma around going to seeking help. If you cut yourself, you go to a doctor. But if you got a heartache or you're emotionally torn or you've had a loss, how do you handle that? And society doesn't do a good job of articulating where to go and what those services are. So that's what we do. And I want us to demystify the process. I also want to share that I'm in a very unique role in this counseling center because I'm not a clinician. I was very honored by the opportunity. I served as an interim director for 2 years while I was serving in housing. We had a search, and eventually I was named the director of the counseling center. I feel like in this role, in our center, we really have it was a really bold vision that Lynn and Howard and Brian and eventually Dr. Ransdell approved. There are so many things that an administrative-minded person, especially in our Division of Student Affairs, how do we link an ivory, kind of a counseling center that sometimes is seen as in an ivory tower in the corner of some campus, how do we integrate them into the university community? Because I understand confidentiality and I understand the services that we offer, but we need to be out there. We need to be big and bold, and students and faculty and staff need to know who we are so that we can demystify the process of counseling and get students more connected to us. So this is the ways that students get connected to us, oftentimes through referrals. And they can come in and see us, or they can stop in. Of course, there's intake paperwork that they need to complete so that we get a better picture of who they are and what's bringing them to us. Of course, we don't have a psychiatrist on our staff, but we refer to down here to the Grace Gilbert for medications for their RPNs or their psychiatrist here on staff. Students can seek as much counseling as they need, which is a rarity, but whatever their presenting issues are, and I'm going to talk about those in a little bit, they can come and seek our services. And then, of course, we have after-hours crisis and sexual assault response. Elizabeth Madariaga is our sexual assault services coordinator, and she is on call all the time, as I am and Carl is, for responses to that or what may be going on. Of course, so we partner a lot with Housing and Residence Life and other, you know, faculty and staff on campus. One thing I want to say about referrals, I had a faculty member a couple weeks ago who brought a student to us, and she emailed me thereafter because she brought the student up, and I don't always get into the story of what's going on in the lobby because I want to be sensitive to why that faculty or staff member is bringing that student to us, and I don't want to out them for whatever their circumstances. So the faculty member brought the student in. Students did the intake paperwork. We got them scheduled. She emailed me and said, at my other institution, if a faculty member brought somebody, they would be seen immediately. Well, we didn't have an immediate opening. We look at the paperwork. Carl reviews all new intake paperwork to see, is it a crisis? Is it not? Is it something that we can schedule them out for? And the majority of the times it is. And so it was a good opportunity to explain to this faculty member about how we do things and how it works and what the process is. So that's a little bit more about that. And actually, hot off the presses, there's a Chronicle article, and Dr. Ransdell's always sending me good information. I'm going to send one back to you. The Chronicle surveyed, I think it was 122 presidents, and in their 112 presidents and student affairs leaders, I'll send it to Brian also, at 2- and 4-year public institutions, and 66% of them, of course, see that mental health at next to diversity are their top concerns and their issues for our student population. And in this article, one of my very good colleagues, Pat Whiteley, who works at the University of Miami down in Florida, She's quoted in talking about some of the things that they've made and changed down at the University of Miami. In addition, our NASPA president, NASPA is the National Association for Student Affairs Professionals. It's our umbrella student affairs association. I was just at the annual conference last week. Our president, Kevin Kruger, is quoted in here, and he talks a lot about, you know, the challenges, the tremendous challenges that colleges and universities have. But he says, what's behind the campus rise in mental health issues? Aside from technology, distractions, and life's pressures getting more stress on everyone, early diagnosis and more awareness are key factors. And I think that's right. You know, this age, and Dr. Bales can probably better speak to this, but 18 to 25, that's sort of the sweet spot for the onset of mental health issues for students. And we get them, and that's when they're here. And they live in our residence halls, and they're in our classrooms, and we don't understand always what's going on. Why aren't they paying attention? Why didn't you come to class? What's going on with you? And so we have to partner. We all have to work together, and that's why it's important that we work together to get students connected to us if that's what they need. So here's a quick little clinical snapshot. I want to just point out that AUCCCD is our Directors Association. It's the Association of College and University Counseling Center Directors. It's an association for just counseling center directors. And I've only been in this role for a short time, well, a couple of years now, but I've attended their annual conference, and it's clinical directors, basically. And what's fascinating, and there's some movement here, I think, as higher education institutions, especially as student affairs units, and partnering with collegiate college and partners, they don't always, administrators, us, faculty, staff, non-clinicians, it's probably most people in the room, don't always understand the process, don't always understand how students get connected to us, don't always understand that Pamela can't call me and say, hey, I brought a student up, how is she doing? I can't speak to you about that because of the confidentiality that goes around with our work. So AUCCCD, we have participated in this survey, annual survey, for multiple years before I came up there. But just as just today, just to kind of get you a picture and kind of how we average, these are our appointments. Our utilization rate is we average about 4 sessions. So many times students will come in, they get what they need. They may not get into deep therapy. They just need a couple touch points, and then they're off on their way, and they're doing great things. AUCCCD data, and this is all institutions, is a little over 5.5. Same presenting concerns at our college center, college counseling center, is the same at many college counseling centers. Of course, there's the referrals from themselves. I need to get counseling. I'm suffering from extreme anxiety. I lost a loved one, what have you. And then us as faculty and staff. And then a little bit about statistics. These are from our data in the CCAP data, which is the intake paperwork that students complete. We get a bigger picture about what's bringing them to us. And while 20% of our clients have had a previous attempt, once they get connected to us, which is true anywhere, once students get the help that they need, they can persist to graduation, and they're gonna, you know, they're well on their way. We don't see a lot of extreme psychosis in the counseling center, and Carl wasn't able to be here today. He could have shed a little bit more light on that, perhaps. But the 75% or 72% of clients believe that counseling helped them with their academic pursuits. Makes sense. If I am suffering from something, whatever it may be, whatever the severity is, if I get connected to someone that can help me, I'm more than likely to persist. Here's a little more. 80% of our clients use 5 or fewer sessions to address their problems. Our clients generally reflect our university population, so our demographics are generally the same. Of course, there are challenges with particular student populations, students of color, because that's a societal thing. People of color's communities typically do not seek counseling because it's taboo in that particular community. We do see international students, and that sometimes there are some cultural barriers there, but we work closely. I know Stephanie isn't here anymore, but we work very closely with Stephanie and Ashley and Tony in that group. That middle part, 28% of our clients were seeking treatment before they came here. And again, as Kevin alluded to in this Chronicle article, our NASPA president, many students come here, and they're already in treatment. They're already seeking treatment. And then sometimes they're already taking medications for disorders. So I also want to say that we are members of the CCMH, and that allows us to participate in national data sets to see where do we gauge. And I can provide a lot more information about that at another time. I just know our time is limited, so I just wanted to give you a brief picture about who we are and what we do. And then we're also IX accredited. And that is a group of counseling center directors who came. We were accredited the fall of 2015. So counseling center directors that come and accredit and make sure that we have the correct staffing patterns, that we're processing clinical notes appropriately and accurately, et cetera. So that's important. Let me talk a little bit about the outreach. We talked about the clinical aspects, but let me talk about the extensive amount of outreach. As you saw, about half to 60% of my clinician's time is spent in one-on-one, behind the closed doors, direct clinical counseling. But we do a lot of outreach. And I want to just highlight a few of these things, as you can see here. This year, and anybody that work, well, the faculty and staff that work here are probably sick of getting emails from me, but I want people to know that the Counseling and Testing Center is here. We have created a lunch and learn series. We know that there's a lot, my staff have a lot of great information about test anxiety, about relationship violence, about mindfulness, about so many things. And I said, how can we get this to the masses? So last fall, we created a lunch and learn series, and we use Adobe Connect to connect to our regional campuses. I don't have the staff to send to the three regional campuses, so that's our way of accommodating that, although we do that.
Peggy.
Yes, ma'am.
Quick question on that slide.
Sure.
You covered so many things. I don't see drug and alcohol addiction. Is that something you do?
We do that. We don't see a lot of that. I don't have those data points for you, but we do refer and work a lot with the community. I had a coach call me last week and said that a student said, I really need help, and he is addicted to marijuana. And he said, I need intensive therapy. Can you offer me some suggestions? So then, of course, I turn to my four team and say, hey, where can we send this student? You know, there's Life Skills, Rivendell, but we can't do the larger things, but the bulk of what our students need, we can accommodate. So, yeah, you're right. Of course, Green, I talked to you about Elizabeth's role. All of us, but Elizabeth in particular, coordinates Green Dot Trainings, which is an awareness program and basically about bystander intervention about sexual assault and sexual prevention. Of course, we've partnered a lot with JTAD, so you'll see here our campaign, and we work with the Attorney General. You all saw the email about the video campaign that we have going on, and you just finished your video. Great.
Yep.
So we have a submission, and hopefully other students have participated. But we've reached over 2,600 people this year so far, and these are faculty, staff, and students. Elizabeth has offered three sessions just this spring to train faculty and staff about how to intervene, how to say that's not appropriate here, how to say not on our campus, this is not acceptable here. And she's also spoken, I mean, there's more here, but these are kind of the highlights of the people that, I say Elizabeth, but it's a lot of our team that present the Green Dot session. Safe Zone is another training that Brian Lee coordinates and presents. He actually presented it to Academic Council this last year. He's reached 160 people. Last year was 233. And in this training, it's to reduce, to make us more aware about the GLBTQ community and to reduce homophobia and heterosexism in our communities. And it's mainly around awareness. So last year, or this year so far, half of the attendees, they sign a pledge to be a public ally. And you can put that Safe Zone sticker on your door if you'd like, or just to be a public ally. And so last year, he had 38% of his attendees sign that public pledge. Okay. These are some of the support groups that we offer. Of course, Brian offers a support group on Mondays. Betsy offers a support group. Brian's is on Tuesdays. Betsy's is on Monday, the Eating for Me. She works with our university dietitian. It's not been very well attended, so we're going to regroup and try and figure out some other strategies. Oftentimes, if I'm suffering from a disordered eating or eating disorders, I'm not wanting to talk to anybody, and I don't want to be in a group necessarily. So group work can be a little more complex because it just depends on what it is and how to get students around that. And then Elizabeth and our GAs, this she's been doing this for a couple of years now, our sexual assault services support group. We also offer training in our department, in our unit, and you'll see our two grads up there with Elizabeth and Carl in the top left-hand corner, Patricia and Elizabeth. We have two Elizabeths, Sarah Elizabeth. So we do offer a training program. And then this is a little bit about the testing part, that little unsung hero in our unit. Julia and Sharon Ursi have coordinated, they coordinate the bulk of our testing. And so this year so far we've administered 2,700 tests. Those are some of the partnerships that we have. Of course, we offer the ACT and the SAT, the STAMP test. I want to highlight that a little bit more here. That's been administered. That's a new university language proficiency test, the STAMP test. And so those are the numbers that we've administered to date. Julie and Sharon also go to our local high schools, not only to talk about WKU, but to have students take the STAMP proficiency test so that they could either, if their level of proficiency is high enough, they could not have to take their language requirements here. We work closely with Dr. Laura McGee in modern languages. And then the Chinese flagship, we've tested lots of students over the past couple of years with that. So I want to hand out this. Thank you, Brian. The Sexual Assault Prevention Month. It used to be Awareness Month, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and now we've called it Sexual Assault Prevention Month. And I want to highlight a few of these events that if you all are available, we'd love to have you present. Specifically, on Monday is the kickoff. Of course, Dr. Ransdale will be there. He's been at every one. We moved it out of the dungeon of the Kentucky Museum, which was a dark and dreary place. When I got on board, I said, nope, I know Dr. Ransdale for 22 years, and it's going to be public, and we're going to be out there. I want people to know who we are and what this event is about, so we moved it to the Union. Jay Todd is always present, always supportive in what we do. So the proclamation is on Monday at 1 o'clock. The Attorney General will be here, so we'd love to have you join us if you're available. Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, that's something that you might participate in. We partner with our Interfraternity Council to host an event where a lot of our college men and staff sometimes don some high-heeled red shoes and walk a mile literally on campus to raise awareness. It's a fundraiser. Take Back the Night, of course, is Thursday, April 20th. Downtown, we've been doing that for a long time. And then the Clothesline Project display, which was in some of the pictures I had on the top, that will be out here, very public. It'll be down at the Preston Center and out in the center of campus. So I talk fast and I walk fast because I'm from up north, and I probably went over and I apologize, but I really appreciate this opportunity to talk a little bit about who we are and what we do, and you know, to try to demystify. You all can help us in what we're trying to accomplish on our campus. But it's okay to come see us.
Thank you.
So thank you, Regent Ridley, for your support.
Dr. Peggy Crow, any questions for Dr. Crow?
Yes. Thank you.
Does the testing center offer any services for Roger testing, GRE or GMAT?
I knew it because Dr. Ansel and I have talked about that for several years. The company that procures the GRE, we don't have the facility, and because we're so close to Nashville and Louisville, they won't give us a stamp of approval to have one, because students can go someplace else. Yeah, it'd be nice.
No question, but just to say it's great. You could quadruple your manpower and probably still not scratch much more surfaces and need for this sort of thing.
Yes, sir.
Whatever you're doing is great. I hope you're getting adequate backup when you need it from the rest of the healthcare system. I imagine not. I do get tested about every day.
Sure do.
Mental health services are just not out there like they need to be. So, great job for doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we could definitely... Oh, go ahead, James.
Yes, very quick question. I love learning more about the Counseling and Testing Center. This is more a question directed towards the future. I know a lot of universities and colleges have implemented interpersonal violence centers on their campus and then also giving students the opportunity to be counselors themselves, so it's peer-to-peer, and I know we can't do that because of the regulations and how it's set up. Would you say that having an interpersonal violence center at WKU would be beneficial for survivors of sexual assault and incorporating that moving forward?
I think, and Elizabeth and I have talked about this a lot, and you and I have started to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if WKU needs an interpersonal violence center. I think what would be great is if we had what my dream is, and again, I've only been in this for a short time, so but I have a vision for what I'm wanting. I want an intake. I want a social worker intake staff member. I'd love another. I have two searchers right now because my psychologist and our training coordinator left last August, so we've been down staff this year and still maintaining these numbers. So I'm going to brag on my team anytime I can. So I have a staff psychologist position. If you know a staff psychologist who wants to run a training program, please send them my way. And we're in the process of hiring another staff counselor because Todd left and now he's at the Tally Center over here. So I don't know that we need a center. What I would like is more staff support, perhaps some more counselors, like a clinical psychologist, a counselor or a social worker, a case manager type person. I think that would be beneficial. And I think that the more we can get, and a part of, Carl and I always say that we take the show on the road. You know, we're going, I know Dean Stevens is gone, we're going to talk to her next week, to her Ogden College, for her new faculty, to talk about what the process is to get students connected to counseling. I think the more we can talk about, spread the word to the university community, the better. So, but they need more time. I can't have Carl doing outreach 70% of the time when he has to be doing direct clinical work. I can't support him doing that. And I can only do so much because I'm not a clinician, but I can certainly speak to how we can partner and what the process is and how to get students to us. In addition, what I've been doing since I've been up there is trying to empower the university community to help students. I was groomed here as a young professional as a hall director, and I did a whole lot of counseling. And I earned a student affairs and counseling degree, but I was doing a lot of programming around healthy relationships, and I didn't have the degree to do it necessarily, and I wasn't a clinician. So there's a lot of people out here in the university community. You know, a student comes into Rachel's office crying, her first response shouldn't be to bring them to the counseling center. How about you pause and say, hey, what's going on with you? Can I help you? Because it could be something very simple that you don't need our expertise for. So what I want to do is empower the university and the student body to step in if something's going wrong, be a bystander. You know all this. You know, Jay Todd, you know this. But step in. Be a voice. Help us to demystify this process on this campus. So that's the movement that I am trying to, charge forward.
Thank you.
I think that's where we can affect a lot of change because there's more of us than there are of us. So.
What the heck is up? What you just said?
Interpersonal Violence Center.
Yeah, what is that?
It's been explained as a particular resource center where students can have peer-to-peer counseling and primarily for survivors of sexual assault. And it is a dedicated location, basically just providing more resources to students who need it after a traumatic event. Is that a good idea?
Yeah.
So
again, Elizabeth and I, we're having more conversation about that because I want to know, is that a location? When I think center, I think a space. And space is a commodity on a college campus. So I don't know if we need the space. I think more staff, more training of the university community, I think could be helpful. So again, I want us to get out there and be out front, but I can't take away from the clinical work because that is preeminent and it has to happen. And so, we're working hard. I just want you to know that. So I appreciate everybody's support of our resources, especially additional staffing because it's important.
Now, I don't want to think my next comment is that this is extremely serious, but next time would you please bring the dog because Dr. Bale has brought dancers and animals and all kinds of stuff, and I get to report on, I think the dog would have been a good addition.
What he's saying into is that the board needs your services
too. Yeah.
Well, I gave you a brain. I mean, teasing. Yeah. Students come up too. We also have.
I actually wore this out. Could you give me another one?
I got plenty. We also.
No.
Do what you gotta do. We also have little, bubble wrap sheets that you get when you mail magnets. We cut squares of those in our. That kind of takes me over the edge when I'm in my office. They come in, students come in, and they're just. It's a stress reliever. And I can hear a student out there. I'm like, wow, they're. Woo! They're really stressed out. Like I need to go out there because that snapping is not stopping. But
thank you so much.
And also, just another global point, if I could please make this. There's some En-ROADS that are, and I pointed to this earlier, but our national associations, like our National Student Affairs Associations and the mental health field, college centers, we need to be working better together, especially administrators, because this conference that I've been to the last two falls, AUCCCD, it's a bunch of clinicians who are complaining about administrators. And I'm sitting in the room as an administrator. I'm like, I can help you solve that. I know how to talk to a dean. I know how to work with a president. I know how to talk to a board. Let me tell you how to advocate for resources. Let me communicate with you the process and how you engender the support of your university community. So that's another broader, bolder vision that I think we could be on the cutting edge. Because this, me in this role is kind of unique. And I'm very honored by the opportunity. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Thank you. I got two more brains. Anybody? Take them home? I'm sorry, Brian.
Mr. Chairman, that finishes the report.
Thank you, Myla Ridley.